The question is, it's more of a comment really at this point with this one, because I really like this one a lot. Because, you know, as a person who does a lot of drawing and painting, and I'm kind of like in a fuzzy state a lot, I'm using this material to sort of give me some measuring tools, some boundaries, a gauge. So that whole idea of iconic and pictorial space. Now I'm looking at this is very interesting because this is about the lying eyes. Because, you see, my perceptual skills have been much sharpened, especially since I've started engaging in all these YouTube videos on McLuhan, because they're not being sharpened by the eye hand, the technique. They're being sharpened by the ear. And I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's
not about the eye. I mean, I've had all the training anybody could ever want, but it's what I'm hearing, what I'm thinking, what I'm engaging in acoustic space that's really changing my visual perception.
Okay, let me respond to that. That's really important. First of all, Ian says you don't know anything unless you say it. So people go and get a visual art education. They're not taught to speak what they want to paint.
No.
And they also don't bring in the other senses, the synesthesia. Now, Cosmic Awareness said way back there in the 60s, there was like six levels of awareness going into the seventh. And it was like you had simple awareness and then animal awareness. And then the third level was self-consciousness, self-awareness. So that was the human being. And then there was seeing into the eyes of another person, communicating through the eyes, like, you know, sensitive to what the eyes, the soul coming through the eye kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That happens on the fourth level. And then the fifth level was the integration of your sensory makeup, your five senses. To integrate them was level five. Then level six was ecstasy. And then level seven was you were at the plane of essence, which came
you're
after
what?
Ecstasy. You were
you're
at,
what?
You were in the plane of essence, ESSENCE. That
oh,
was
the
cosmic
plane
awareness
of
term.
Essence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was its term for the ascended state. So look at the progression there. You've got a flower level of awareness, and then a bird, and then self awareness, the human. Then the eyes become sensitive to see something behind the crude animal human form you're looking at. You start to see their essence, maybe. And then the fifth level is the integration of the senses. So McLuhan said in the 60s, people start taking LSD and these drugs because television was the first integrated sensorium showing a lot of data in its experience. And so therefore people wanted to have a full sensory experience and get out of their literate visual bias. So they took drugs to integrate their senses. And McLuhan said, he wrote back then in the mid-60s, that art school training wasn't as powerful as taking psychedelics. He thought psychedelics was the closest to understanding, feeling the global theater. And then you get to an ecstatic state. That would be the integration of your senses, I guess. And then you get into the plane of essence. So the art teachers, they should use McLuhan's book, Through the Vanishing Point, which emphasized other sensory modalities to make you a better painter. And which is what you're learning right now, you know, 40 years, 50 years later. So it makes sense what you're saying.
Yes, and in this one, in the iconic and pictorial space, the part that I really liked was the return of the Paleolithic, the return of the hunter.
Yeah.
This one spoke a lot about our whole political life is guerrilla style, total decentralism.
And the caveman comes back, the caveman sensibility. Mm-hmm.
The role of the hunter, the training of the total perception, understanding the total perceptual field, and teaching people how to understand that. And McLuhan was an advocate of that. And he was also an expert on Piaget.
Yes,
that I learned this. And Piaget is very important. It connects all of this because it's the animal of the person, the developmental stages of the person.
So yeah, that's the Montessori method.
Together.
Is that the Montessori method?
No, Piaget is developmental. Is a developmental model. about how people go from different stages of development through their lives.
Right. Yeah.
But
PJ McCone
talked a lot
about
the integration of sensorial.
Yes.
Material.
Yeah, McLuhan talked about the Piaget and Montessori. He talked about both. But you were saying, oh, the caveman. Yeah, one of the first things that Ion talked about was the caveman sensibility, the caveman being. That was in the first couple of months of talking to Ion, which I thought was pretty good. Yeah, but no, way back.
Rafi?
Yes, no, but that's the man in the cave.
No, the caveman.
The man that is the man
that
is
literally.
Not really.
No, but
using his
but
perception.
Rossi, Ion says the caveman.
Just watching the shapes.
Yes.
Rossi, do you know that?
Hold it. Important point here. Rossi says, and I mean Ion says that the caveman was not in Plato's cave. The caveman was a fully ascended
not
being.
Not in Plato's cave. Okay.
Yeah, that's, the Plato's cave comes in with writing and visual space. So you don't want
have
to mix
you ever
up the,
heard of...
You don't want to mix up the word cave of Plato with the actual what we call caveman, Paleolithic man. The Paleolithic man had an integrated sense life. That's what McLuhan means is the global theater is bringing people back to the integrated sense life of the Paleolithic or caveman. And that's way before Plato. Okay? It's important to understand that. The caveman...
At the same time, it's interesting because even as people that regain this perception, then we're still in the stage of caveman.
You said people tweaking. I didn't get that. People tweaking this condition. What did you say?
No, you say that the caveman is not like in the cave, like in the flat.
No,
sense.
He's not in the cave. The,
yes,
the cave,
that's why.
The man is
so we are
tactile.
Going back to this caveman.
To the caveman.
Stage.
Yes, but we're on another level. We've done the cycle of technological evolution. So we, as McLuhan said, the meaning of the title of Finning's Wake is we go back a wake. Or we make the past a wake, meaning funeral, or both, McLuhan says, the meaning of his message, meaning of his massage. Where we make the past a wake, we get rid of it, or we go through it again, retrieve an awakened state, or we do both.
Like in metanoia.
Yeah.
Metanoia. I'm starting, that's the other thing I wanted to say, is that I noticed since Roxy has been talking about metanoia, I can start to see metanoia happening and the different art things that I do. I'm starting to see that reversal, that going back and retracing things. And, you know, it's very nice because it's not metacognition. It's not just thinking about analyzing or talking about your own thinking. It's actual path of returning, kind of the flip turn in the pool thing where you hit revelation and you start going back and the metanoia starts and you realize this has already all been created anyway.
Yeah, that metanoia would
that's
be more...
That's what I think.
Hey, Janet, the metanoia would be more perceptual, what McLuhan called perceptual, and the idea of thinking about things in the past, that's conceptual.
Uh-huh.
That's not metanoia.
That's the old word. No, that's metacognition. That's a whole different story. I'm starting to understand the difference between those two ideas.
Yeah, well, McLuhan said metacognition is conceptual thinking.
Conceptual. Uh-huh.
No, conceptual. But metanoia is perceptual.
Perceptual.
Yeah.
That's very good.
All right, good. And the...
good.
So Roxy is taking a lot of the cliches, the archetypes are conceptual, referring to perceptual situations. Now, I found this in my McLuhan stash. Look what McLuhan says about cliched archetype. This is a good time to bring it in. Let me update the call-in board. That's always blipping out. Bring that back.
Yes, and another thing that impressed me now that I were listening to the revelation is even the letters alone are cliches and archetypes. Like Ion tells you in different occasions, look, that's a capital A, that's a capital
yes.
A, whatever, and the punctuation. Like look at the... There
you mean like when he spells things
comma,
out?
There is a... No.
Where he spells things out, where he goes,
Well, talking about Revelations.
No, but he points out whether there's a capital M. Little man is a small m. And if it's a capital M, that's ascending. But capital M, capital A, capital N is the realized person. There were three distinctions he'd make about the size of the letters.
Yes, or the meme of the 666. He says there are 6 degrees of separation in the inner kingdom, the middle kingdom, and the outer kingdom.
Yeah.
And now, she was talking about the senses, and usually they tell you you have 5 senses and the 6th sense, that is this weird extra sensorial perception.
Yeah.
The 6th sense. So the 666 is actually little men. It's not the devil. But
right.
He also, like, for you, numbers are very important.
Yeah.
So he's also accentuating when there is a number. Like, he's telling you.
Okay, so listen to this. That's correct. Clay Felker was the publisher of what is now called New York Magazine, not New Yorker, New York. And Tom Wolfe wrote the famous article, What If McLuhan Is Right, in 1965, because Clay Felker, his boss, you know, commissioned something on McLuhan. Now, Howard Gossage, the ad man in San Francisco, probably got Clay Felker to take an interest in McLuhan. Then they got Tom Wolfe to write it. So McLuhan wrote a letter to Clay Felker on July 31st, 1965. I don't think the article had come out yet. I have a copy of the article, but I think it's later in November 21st. So McLuhan must know they're going to do an article on him, and Tom Wolfe has interviewed him or whatever. So Clay Felker, let's check your sounds. Why is there noises there? Mute yourself if you're in the kitchen or something. So McLuhan writes this letter to Clay Felker, and it's about the cliche and the archetype, which nobody knows about. Okay, who got... Is that Akito jumped off? I just heard someone, so hopefully they come back on. So nobody knows about cliche archetype in 1965. The book doesn't come out until 1970. So McLuhan lays his best stuff on Clay Felker. So here's what he says. I know we have, McLuhan writes to Clay Felker, to sort of a kingpin in the media in New York City. I know we have a revolutionary document. So he's talking about understanding media. It will be profusely illustrated with historical and contemporary materials. But the central theme is as simple as the title. And then he has the title. Cliché is new technology acting on psyche and society. So he defines cliché. Then he says, archetype is the old technology elevated into art form by the processing of new technology. Now, I'd supplement by saying, people in the 60s, 70s tried to integrate their sense life of their chemical body because they were in the new invisible discarnate virtual state. So it turned the old sensory matrix into an art form. People started to make their body life be more important.
Yes,
so,
and that's really important because many people think cliché and archetype is just literary.
Right.
And
yeah, that's right.
He expanded cliché as the technology is affecting.
Wow.
Right.
Us, and that's the revelation. Okay. It's all about clichés and archetypes.
Right. So McLuhan says cliché is new technology acting on psyche and society. Archetype is the old technology elevated into art form by the processing of new technology. One commanding insight concerning the present day of electric technology pervasively concerns the entire book. So he's either talking about cliched archetype. He was hoping to publish that book 66, 67. So he may be talking about the cliched archetype book, but it takes many years for it to get published. But he's saying one commanding insight concerning the present day of electric technology pervasively concerns the entire book. It is this. So this is the theme. Electric circuitry, the new technology, is integral and unifying. Remember we were talking with Janet about the integrated sensory life that Cosmic Awareness talks about? Well, the environment was going to integrate people's lives compared to the visual fragmentation by default. The electric circuitry would create integral and a unified situation. Not a visually unified, but a multi-sensory integration. That's what unifying means. The older technologies, at least since the Paleolithic age, have been specialists. So Neolithic age is the beginning of specialism. Paleolithic are not specialists. So the older technology, at least since the Paleolithic age, have been specialists and fragmenting in terms of human sensibility. The electric age is the new age of man, the hunter, man, the fact finder, and data processor. Each new technology of Neolithic times, that would be the specialist phase of the last 6,000 or 7,000 years has been a fragmenter. So 6,000 years of technology has been fragmenting. Each of these technologies since writing and architecture has shaped human awareness in specialist ways, including our awareness of the past. In other words, it fragmented the past from the present and from the future. That was the effect of writing and the Neolithic phase. They thought the past was something separate from them. Not that the cavemen thought, didn't even have a sense of the past, which is one big experience. But if you go a step further past the cavemen, the tactile tribes considered the past. Their ancestors were part of their today. So they had no idea of past being separate. So then McLuhan says, in the age of circuitry, or the age of the extension of our own nervous system as an environment, the new technology has an integral character for the first time. Now, you have to understand he's saying this in the mid-60s when everybody's worried about technologies, our Big Brother, 1984, mechanical takeover, total screw-up. You know, this is bad. Whereas McLuhan's saying, no, technology is integrating it. We have to recognize that, but it's integrating us. Nobody had that idea back then. Then McLuhan says, as this electric technology invests or surrounds our earlier technologies and cultures of man, as its content, a great paradox occurs. So as electric technology invests or surrounds the earlier technologies and cultures of man, they are the content. So the Global Theater has all these earlier specialist technologies as its content. A great paradox occurs. The new serves to reveal the hacked and fragmentary character of the old forms of the past thousands of years. The new serves to reveal the hacked and fragmentary character of the old forms of the past thousands of years. So McLuhan's saying the fragmentation of the Neolithic age is something people are beginning to realize. It's not an idea of his. It's a trend because they're now in the new invisible integrated environment. So the fragmentary character of the specialist 6,000 years becomes kind of intuited or visible. So then McLuhan says it is the new that is characterized by depth and profundity, wholeness and integrity. Now, people were pissed off at pop culture in the 60s, the older literate generations, and they did not see any depth or profundity in the television experience. See, so this is how radical McLuhan is. It is the new that is characterized by depth and profundity, wholeness and integrity, and it is the old that looks superficial. So McLuhan's saying the literate phase look superficial to people because they're so involved in the new invisible depth that they reject the recent past. So McLuhan is trying to save the book culture, I mean the useful parts of it, and counter the fact that books, that people are thinking and acting as if books are obsolete. See, so you got to get that. It is the new that is characterized by depth and profundity because it is different from visual space. It appears to be depth. But the depth of visual space is not noticed anymore. It just looks superficial. Then McLuhan says, archetypal awareness is electric and pre-cortical. precortex of your brain, and physiologically primitive. Now, look, you go back up the top. He said, cliche is new technology. Archetype is the old technology. So he says archetypal awareness is electric and precortical and physiologically primitive. It's a little starting to get a little odd here. McLuhan is mixing up his definitions, but we'll get to that in a second. He then says, it is the latest that is really old. So the retrieval of Paleolithic humans is the old, but now it is the new. As people grope to get integrated sensibility by doing things like psychedelics and whatever else offered that idea. Then he says, no wonder we are confused. Our children go from the new electric environment to schoolrooms of the most fragmented and mechanized phase in the entire history of human culture. That is to say, they go from an electric environment to a mechanical one, from an integral to a fragmented one, from archetype to cliche. Now look at that.
That sounds good to me.
He flipped the meanings of archetype and cliche here. They're going from the new, the archetype, to the old, the fragmented cliche. But up at the beginning, he said cliche is new technology, and archetype is the old technology. So you have to notice that he flipped the meanings. And he has to flip the meanings because he's translating Finnegan's Wake, where the twin sons flip into each other and flip into the sister. There's a lot of flipping of visual categories into each other. This is why when Clay Felker got this letter, he was totally fucking confused. And probably if he noticed, well, there's a contradiction here, why is McLuhan not noticing he's making a contradiction? So you have to figure out how to read this, knowing this flip. He's always including the flip in his definitions. So when he talks about the archetypal, he says, archetypal awareness is electric and precortical and physiologically primitive. So to notice archetypes is a primitive situation, which is now extended in the electric age. So it's a different meaning of archetype than the archetype of literate Carl Jung categorizing repeating images in different religions, repeating the same theme. Like when Roxy finds the chromosome 14 cross in every religion, in every spin-off, that's a literate classification and a repeating form. That's a literate meaning of archetype. But as Roxy said, archetype can be multisensory. Well, that's what he means when he says archetype awareness is electric. So McLuhan is he being lazy and not spelling out what I'm spelling out? Or does he leave it purposely slightly confusing so that you have to work at it to figure out what's going on?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that the acoustic environment of the electronic world that we live in produces that the iconic effects, the cool effects. And out of that is why McLuhan does this, why he's always repeating himself. He'll let somebody talk and he'll agree with them and agree with them. And then he goes back and he repeats the same thing that they just said they didn't agree with, but then McLuhan agreed with it. Because people notice the previous environment, not the one they live in. Because people are, that's the way people are, or at least they have been up until this point.
That's a good point. No, it's a good point that we are in a different situation right now. You know, if I am saying it's a new age, a new matter, he can point to the fact that we are in a new situation where people are awake. And they don't know what to do with it. There's no way to translate it, but they are being ascended into this not walking backwards into the future. They're being forced to notice the changes in the present. That's the trauma of our time.
And as the acoustic environment continues to get ramped up, the reverb is very fast. You get this powerful reverb effect of all of this information going through this acoustic space. And so people don't even know where they are.
As a grammarian, I need to correct you. We're not retrieving acoustic space. It's audio-tactile, because electricity is tactile. It is not acoustic. Tactile is not a particular sense. It's the interplay. So the main
But acoustic and the tactile, they're kind of combined together now. That's what you're saying.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, no, but you got to know the difference. Audio hyphen tactile. He said we live in an audio tactile environment, not a visual space environment. But audio is spherical. Acoustic space is a sphere. Visual space is a pyramid, hierarchy. But tactility is not any shape. It's not sphere or pyramid. It is the interplay of the senses. You could say synesthesia. And it's not any particular sense. So electricity is largely tactile. It's not any particular sense. We don't know what electricity is, but we've extended it. The
concept. You mean like radionic fields and stuff like that? Like all the particles coming out of the screens, tactile like that?
Well, that's a visualization of a tactile. You cannot visualize a tactile, but that's an attempt to visualize a tactile. So if you understand that, you can accept it. It's a shadow. There's your Plato cave shadow of tactility. But tactility is not visual, acoustic, or anything you can see. It is this interplay. It's the interplay. It's the gap between the senses. It's the thing that does the integration of the different particular sensory data. So knowing that tactile is not any particular sense, then what do we have as content? We have music and ear and the audio. So the audio takes over in the 20th century more than the visual. It has more charisma. So that the 20th century is a great electric age, a great musical age, because we are able to retrieve the acoustic content. But it's under the impact of tactile, what Zappa called bone conduction, proprioceptive feeling of the music. So it had, as it got more and more amplified, it moved it beyond just the ear. May McLuhan went so far as to say that teenage music, he said that in the 60s, is not music the way literate orchestras play. It is an environment, he said. So the audio tactile, the mixture of the electrical and the ear is dominant, is what the schools can't handle. And then you get the digital replay, but that's later. So I found this letter. It's really good to show McLuhan's technique of communicating. I mean, you know Clay Felker. It's all new to him, and he's going to be confused. And McLuhan even says, we are going to be confused. Because he's writing like a scientist, you know, like a mathematician, writing very precisely. And you have to notice why he shifts his words, the meanings of them, the apparent meanings. You get that?
Yes, Bob.
Yes. Yes.
What's that mean? That sounds a little peeved. Yes, Bob, we got that. Who said that? Who had that tone?
Yes, and I suppose the anger of some people that react so extreme against you is because they're seeing all these paradigm changes, and it's very hard to accept everything you think you know and everything.
Right.
You're a specialist of is not.
Well, Clay Felker probably
state
never
state of the art anymore. It's obsolete.
Yeah. Right, Clay Felker probably never responded. I'll see. I don't know if there's any other letters. I don't. We'll see. But he probably didn't respond to McLuhan and said this guy's nuts. But Tom Wolfe was doing an article. I'm not going to interfere. So Tom Wolfe makes McLuhan famous, and we never hear from Clay Felker again. He just drops off. He can't take it. He can't take McLuhan. He probably got pissed off. I mean, McLuhan.
I
got
like
that
Marshall
effect.
McLuhan.
Who's saying that? Is that
I
Janet?
I really like it. No, I like Marshall
Janet?
McLuhan. Yeah.
Are you?
I like Marshall McLuhan. I think Marshall McLuhan has really changed my artwork. It's changed my perception. The more I listen to it, the sharper I'm getting. Just really good stuff. And I don't ever want to stop learning about it.
Right. And, Jen, that's why I used to criticize the art teachers when I was in New York. I'd meet art professors. I'd say, why aren't you teaching McLuhan's art, quote, theory, art updating for the art student. And, you know, Roxy had the same situation as you. She learned the content of art history, but never saw the basic point of environments create a different kind of artist through the different phases. And so she has a great appreciation of McLuhan like you're getting.
Because the Android meme has just completely sucked all the meaning out of art. And
yeah,
Roxy said last week, art does not deliver the goods. And that is really the truth. And if you poke around in the art world enough, you begin to realize how empty it, meaningless it really is.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a business for Wall Street traders. It's just they need to translate their cashless wealth into some objects. I mean, that's what the Rockefellers and the Guggenheims did in the 1920s. Now we're moving into money being public property and having private wealth. Wouldn't have its hierarchy, so they moved it into the charisma of art objects and started those museums to put themselves on another level of being wealthy. They couldn't use
McLuhan
convention.
Called that the commodification of art.
Yes.
That's what
yeah.
he called it
like
in the 1966 lecture.
Yeah, and Baudrillard went on and developed that commodification, if you want to. Baudrillard takes that.
I don't know about that yet, but...
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I read that some galleries or auction houses won't sell to anybody, just even if you have the money to buy it, because it's not good for their business. It has to be like a museum or somebody who is a big collector.
Yeah.
But even if you had the money to buy a piece of art, they won't sell it to you because it's not good for their business.
That's right. And if you look at McLuhan's Laws of Media, they talk about Tom Wolfe's book, very good book in 1975-76 called The Painted Word. And it's about all 20th century art has to have a theory.
Ooh, thank
to prop
you,
up.
Bob.
Yeah, definitely want to read that. It's a watered-down version of McLuhan. But McLuhan, the two McLuhans, Eric and Marshall, write in Laws of Media about the secret societies in art. And that's what his letters to Ezra Pound are in 1951-52. He says, I finally discovered that the secret societies run the sciences and the arts. And the secret societies are the phenomenon you're talking about. It's an obsolete way of making wealth, but they got to be very careful and nurture it and cherish it and create this aura around it. And that's when Walter Benjamin wrote that essay in the 30s about...
Yes.
Movies take away the aura from the Gutenberg arts. But, you know, I can name her the Boone Gallery. What's her name? Mary Boone. These people with the big Larry Gagosian, these huge, very wealthy art gallery owners, they nurture, like an art form, like horse breeding, our whole art world. And so they now they go into the art schools and hijack some graduate student to make an artist. So, yeah, it has nothing to do with the real arts. McLuhan said art isn't obsolete. It's just that the word art should be applied to media landscapes. They're the new teaching machines, the way books and the Gutenberg arts were 200 years ago. So
what's a media landscape, Bob? What is that, a media landscape? What does that mean? If that's the new art, what is a media landscape?
It's the fact that everybody's walking around staring at their cell phone. So here's the iPhone, a new technology that Jobs invented, and everybody starts using it. It has all kinds of effects on the previous media, plus new effects. That's what the medium landscape is. It's another word for medium. But people thinking medium is an object, like a TV set in the corner of your room. No, the effects of that environment of television and everybody using the television creates a new landscape.
And that's the medium.
That's the medium.
That's the
media landscape. That's the new art. Because all of it now, all of the radio, TV, movies, all the old analog media environments of the first half of the 20th century are processed 24/7 in the digital scape. The digital landscape. So they don't even have much solidity anymore. They're what I call memes or after images. So the present landscape is the digital content. That's the present media art. And you watch the art schools try to figure out how to analyze digital installations and digital creations at the Venice Biennale or something, and they're trying to fit it back into the old art historical terms, and it doesn't work. But it does.
It doesn't work,
anymore.
It's a losing game.
It does work if you apply McLuhan's cliched archetype terms. That's how you talk about the new art. So McLuhan actually creates the correct art criticism, and he writes about it in these letters I got all the time. He's talking about Greenberg and everybody else, Rosenberg, are ridiculous, all the famous art critics. And he knew he had the proper way to teach for schools the new media landscapes as art forms. So he actually stalled.
Because he was for perceptual training. McLuhan was for perceptual training in the elementary and in the high schools.
Yep. And so was Zappa. Zappa used to say, okay, you don't like the porn rock, the bad Twisted Sister music? Well, fucking refund your schools and have jazz and these other musical forms in the schools. And they'd all been, you know, being dismantled in the 80s under Reaganomics. They wasn't any traditional school thing. But that was his rebuttal. You guys are trying to censor, you know, what's part of the present, and you can't do that. But if you really were serious, you would lobby to get more funding for proper musical training in the schools.
Mm-hmm. He also says to put cameras in the hands of communities that are not literate, that in order, because of the camera, the I would say a black and white camera myself, but that's just my own idea, that putting the camera in the hands of all these kids in these urban environments that have low literacy levels would actually increase their literacy, because the camera is a hot medium. It's literacy, it's a visual medium, and it will begin to prepare the mind, to develop the mind to be able to deal with higher levels of literacy. That's what Marshall McLuhan said.
Higher levels of older media landscapes. Literacy,
yes.
Older media landscape. Now, let me tell you, there's a book you want to get, two books. See, Ted Carpenter did this. He abandoned the McLuhan scene in the late 60s, and he went to New Guinea, Papua New Guinea, and he handed out cameras to the Aboriginal tribes. They hadn't seen a white man in, like, a long time. Carpenter was the first white man. I think that got cut off during World War II. And so he documents what happens to these tribal people, the identity crisis they have, having access to this new media, in a book called Oh, What a Blow That Phantom Gave Me, which is a quote from, I think, Don Quixote. So Oh, What a Blow That Phantom Gave Me documents the experiment that you want to be done to kids in the ghettos or wherever, in Papua New Guinea. And then the other book that goes with that is They Beheld. Okay, the other book is They Became What They Beheld. Those are two important Carpenter books where he actually hands out the cameras to the tribesmen, and it ruins their life. They end up wandering in the cities, going to find, you know, urban places and wandering around like Canadian Indians, Canadian natives, and I guess here in America too. They're trapped. The old world's gone, but they can't get into the new world. So they're in limbo. That leads to all their problems.
Because they've been exposed to visual space and the literacy was destroyed their identity.
Yeah, and
like
the electric
that?
Media. And yeah, the electric media destroyed them. All media destroyed them. They had no
media. All
media
destroyed.
They had a lot of, you know, ancient little media, whatever you call the stuff that Aboriginals had, where they had a bunch of feathers, a couple of rocks to pound the food, and a bow and arrow to kill the the animal, you know, primitive, low scale, low tech environment, right? And then you just bring them, and they're fascinated with it, and they love looking. They would when they first saw pictures, Carver reports this, they saw photographs of themselves, they turn into an icon, and they'd stick it into their hair, and they'd walk around proudly with their photo stuck in their hair, you know, because it was new. It was a new image of themselves. They'd never seen themselves before. But in the long run, the tribe was destroyed. And so Carpenter writes all about that. So the very thing you're talking about, giving it to kids, he did it in Papua New Guinea.
something. Really something.
What?
That's really something.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So you've already Googled and seen the book, Over the Blow of the Phantom.
Yeah.
Gave me, yeah. It's a very good book. It's a guy, you know, taking McLuhan, and he and McLuhan discovered a lot of things together in the 50s, but him taking McLuhan, while McLuhan was running around the world being famous and lecturing to everybody, Carpenter did the field work. Being an anthropologist, he went in and said, okay, what happens if we give these people who haven't had any contact with civilization for hundreds of years, a long time, we got raw people here, see what happens.
McLuhan said something that could be construed to be very controversial when he said that the African-American people, if they, their drive to become literate,
yeah,
you know, their drive to, you know, have higher levels of literacy, blah, 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 all that stuff, that if they embrace that, and they move away from their audio tactile culture, they
yeah.
will be doing themselves a great disservice and betray the entire culture.
That's right.
And I can see that from my own experience working in urban environments, you know, and I can
yeah.
see how that plays out, you know.
So let me
the
give
audio
you something you're not mentioning. Yeah, listen,
uh-huh.
here's what you got to understand about this. He writes about this in War and Peace in the Gold Village in the 60s. So the blacks are on the edge of acquiring literacy. Right when the white elite world is going electric and audio tactile. So what the blacks are objected to, this is why Watts riots happened, this was like the subliminal reason for the rioting and the formation of the Black Panthers, is that right when we can get the literacy stuff that you white people made a lot of wealth on, you're abandoning the literate program and going into acoustic tactile stuff, and we're trying to become literate. It's the same thing that happened to China. The East goes West and the West goes East. You know, Chinese became the
yeah.
main students at the universities, and the Westerners all dropped out in many different ways. So here's the blacks acquiring literacy. McLuhan would say, long after the subculture of literacy was bypassed by Louis Armstrong, who integrated the world with jazz.
Correctamundo. That is the truth.
Yeah. And so McLuhan said this confusion, because the whites don't know what they're doing and the blacks don't understand what's happening, will lead to race wars. And McLuhan wrote, talking about controversy.
Nobody knows what's happening. Nobody understands what's happening.
No, people don't know anything, but there were people who had a few answers. But listen to this. So he wrote in 1970, because of this confusion, the blacks will suffer genocide. Now, can you imagine anybody reading that? You know, Stokely Carmichael.
That's outrageous.
Right, and he said
It is.
Now, the CIA, in my experience, the CIA knew that, and so they did slow genocide. They brought the heroin into the ghettos. They busted all the blacks, and they put them in prisons, and that solved economic problems. The hardware world got jobs in prisons, while the software tyranny continues anyways. And the blacks end up, their sons and daughters all end up in jail, strung out and fucked over. In other words, the elites, the triggerman level, the racist elites, they said, we're not going to just go in and shoot all the blacks or have a civil war. We're going to do it slowly, erode them. So by the year 2000, I'm listening to Henry West or Cornel West and the other guy, Henry somebody, the famous black professors up there at Harvard, coming to speak to people in New York and saying that we've got a lot of blacks who are wealthy today and are part of the middle class, but they've abandoned the ghetto and they have nothing to do with the people they came from, and they're no longer black, really. They are something else. So he was crudely explaining 30 years later that civil rights and all that literate program led nowhere. He was catching up to McLuhan. And so I would try to point this out to him. And, you know, I was in the question period, Bob would start talking McLuhan. The guy would go in there, he thought he saw a red flag if I mentioned McLuhan. You know, it's a bull. And it's amazing. The guy who had the answers has got all this stigma, media stigma around him that Cornel West won't pay any attention to.
Yeah.
That's the irony of human stupidity. The guy who gets the answer looks like he's the stupidest. And the person who looks the most successful is the stupidest in actual understanding. So the black middle class, they didn't know. They were no longer black. I mean, Bert's an example. They were living in a discarnate, you know, digital technologies, and it's not limited to the chemical body. So Cornel West didn't even
kids,
know that.
But Bob, all the kids live with digital technology. All the kids
yes.
have digital. They're
does.
Not. It's an equalizer. Everybody's got this. You've got,
right.
I mean, people in Watts have this.
I know that, but listen to the effect. The effect is that everybody who has one is no longer an everybody. That's a chemical body term. They're not anything anymore. They don't go that far.
Yeah.
And so an example of auditory space taking over is that every generation, but especially the last 30 years, what do the white suburban kids worship for their media content? Is the rap singer. The guy with the hip, you know, multi-sensuous, non-visually biased sensibility. See, that's the content of the tactile media is the acoustic music industry, or especially the power of rap, which is not music in any traditional sense. Rap is something else. Zappa used to say it's politics. Rap was politics. It would be tribal warfare. So the blacks infiltrated the white schools with their black rap culture, and then it destroyed whatever
literacy was there. And
hijacked
the environment. Yeah.
Beg your pardon?
Yeah, they definitely have hijacked the environment with it. And it is very, very, very powerful. Very powerful on
Don't
the people.
Wait a minute. You're getting carried away with the content. That's an illusion. The blacks, the Puffy, whatever it is, Swampy Puffy, whatever his name is, whatever, Dr. Dre.
Puff Daddy.
Any of those, Puff Daddy, any of those fuckers, they're no better off, even though they're billionaires. They're as equally fucking decimated by their own success. So the content
Puffy.
Is music making wealth, Hollywood making wealth, and nobody benefits from it except the Android meme. That's where we're at today. The black star, they all have identity crisis. Half of them kill themselves. Look at Whitney Houston. Look at, if I remembered them, look at Eminem. I can't remember their names, but there's a whole bunch of them had terrible lives.
They're all dead.
Yeah, they're all fucking dead. What's his, the two-pack, six-pack? What was
dead.
That?
Two-pack sport.
He may still
all
be alive.
All my friends are dead.
Yeah. And the guy who started it all, Sugar Knight, he's fucking in jail.
He's in jail because he
killed Death Row Records or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know, Flash, one of the in the rap history, they talk about Flashmaster, somebody, and two other. There's three of them they talk about in the rap
Flash.
History.
Grandmaster
what?
Flash. Grandmaster Flash.
Flash. Yeah, either he or someone else like him was shot in the early 80s and killed. And Mae Brussels said, look at that. The Reagan's coming in. The old race wars are starting, and they're killing off the rap guys. And this is before rap was big. This is like late 70s. I mean, if you look up
wow.
Grandmaster Flash, I think he's still alive, so it can't be him. But there was another guy on his level. He got killed, assassinated very quickly. And May was seeing that as, you know, neo-Nazi stuff. But the content wars are what we're witnessing. Nothing but content wars. Because nobody can do anything about the Android meme. How do you stop it? So McLuhan describes, you know, he would say these things. He says we're living in the planet of the dead. So he could talk about the integrative factors of electric media, of electric tactility being extended. But he said people cannot adjust that fast. So it's going to wipe everybody out. And he called that the apocalypse. If we were smart, we would have turned off television and the electric media in the 60s to give ourselves time to adjust to what was going to happen to us. Which then
because
comes
these
to,
new these new media
comes,
go ahead.
Our death. They're gods, you know, they're Shiva. What's the Hindu three gods? The creator, destroyer, and the preserver? That's what every media environment is. And McLuhan says that the gods, the Greek gods, actually refer to people who invented technologies back then. The Greek mythology refers to technologies.
Because what McLuhan says is that it is psychologically traumatic to be exposed to these environments, to any new environment, just as you said with the Aboriginal people, and that we are being psychologically traumatized, and we don't even know it because we can't even find it. We can't even find the new environment. You have, to some degree, are beginning to define it, but we are starting to see an entire new iteration of the electronic environment, and the effects on all of us are going to be profound, and we may never know it in our own, well, in our own lifetime.
Well,
you know,
things are
speeding up. That's what I think.
So Jennifer Lawrence, this actress, I think that's her name, comes on and says, America is being punished by these hurricanes and storms because we made Trump president. Okay, so there's a person trying to figure out what's causing this disaster. Everybody agrees there's a huge disaster is happening, and they like to say, see, it's climate change. But it ain't climate change. It's something else happening. And, well, you know, if we want to get honest, it's fucking ION. ION is the thing. It's like the first technology that makes people feel good. Well, maybe all technologies made people feel good. But ION, when he had a private session, you'd go numb and you'd feel good. So ION was a technological effect, if you want to update it to where we are today. You know, ION devastates people. ION makes them happy. Then luckily we got some products that'll smooth the ride over. But remember, we're talking here, we're here riding the new environment, the new invisible environment, ION. That's what this is. We're a laboratory discussing our effects, never been done before, as we implement them. We're warning you as you take
absolutely
our environment.
Right, Bob. Absolutely right.
You can't get a better sense than that.
Creating the future without anticipating it.
And when you're laughing, you're learning, Bob, eh? A lot of learning going
Bob's
on here right
lab.
Now.
Bob's lab. Come to the Bob's lab and
we must congratulate Janet for not being overwhelmed.
We're in the lab
for like 40 fucking minutes. It's incredible. You're getting tougher, Janet. You can
She's
handle it.
Overtime.
Kiss your burnout.
Yeah, but you did your homework during the week.
I'm doing okay. Yeah. I'm handling my energy very well. Thank you.
Yeah. But because you were doing your homework during the week.
I'm going to say goodbye now.
You can't take it that.
I'm getting burned out.
Hear the last sentence. You did your homework this week. You listened to the McLuhan talks, and it helped you. You know, you listen to McLuhan.
So much.
Bob.
It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
But I have to go, Bob, because I'm done. I am so done. I just have to listen now. I get crazy, and then my head heats up, and then I'm just a mess.
Bob.
So
it's time
to go.
Bob, Bob is a new environment. I am the new environment.
The new environment.
Janet, stay.
Well, very good.
Pardon?
You'll be
yeah,
fine.
Take, are you, do you take our
Would anybody
Janet?
Like another question? What?
Yeah, ask another question. If you can.
No, I don't have any more questions. I was making fun of myself.
Okay, all right. Do you do restructure?
Now.
Do you have products? You have our products?
Not right now. The last bottle of iron, I will not say, but I will start again.
Yeah, you won't make it.
Get the
drops,
girl.
You won't be able to handle your learning.
I need my bottle of Rebob.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time you see Cornell West, you tell him he learned nothing at fucking Harvard. He's a fucking dummy, okay? And Bob tried to tell him 15 years ago in New York City.
Okay. All right, everybody. I'll see you next week. Goodbye.
All right, thank you very much, Janet.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll see you guys.
Thanks,
bye.
Janet.
You know, here's something that's funny about being me. I would stand up at the end of the lecture, and I'd be smiling to myself. I knew, here we go again. I will be assassinated one more time. But I went through the ritual. It was a fucking ritual. And watched the dumbfoundment, the bewilderment, and the telling me to shut up effects every time. Create a great sense of humor. I recommend it. Let's see. Who's blocked here? United Kingdom. I guess that's Sean.
Swampy.
Okay, who wants to talk next?
No, Bob.
Yes, Sean. Did you want to say something?
Yes, school's very good today.
You like it, the school. Great, great class, Bob.
Yes. I've been having to listen offline sometimes, but I just listened to the last half an hour before I actually phoned in, and you just cover so much. It's just worth sitting, listening, going over it again, the way you emphasize the difference between the tactile, that it's not a sense, it's interplay.
Yeah.
All those little things, it's just, we've got to be in class.
Yeah, it has to be repeated till you perceive it.
Absolutely, yeah. John.
Yeah, the more he says it over and over, the more it just becomes clearer and clearer and clearer.
Well, McLuhan said repetition was part of exploring depth awareness. So, you know, the words, like Ayn does that. He says things, the intonations, the frequencies of what Ayn says, lead you into one interpretation. But then when he does it again, you get another interpretation. So that's exploring in depth all the multi-leveled implications of one word.
Yeah, and then the slipping that you showed McLuhan does sometimes, where if you're reading it without noticing he's doing that, you might just get it all wrong.
Yeah.
If you don't realize he's just slipping. Yeah.
I mean, people still haven't got a lot of it right. McLuhan stuff. Even the professors who get paid teaching it don't have it right. That's why they don't let me on their forum. I embarrass them.
Yeah.
But I've got an incredible bunch of letters here. Yeah, go ahead.
No, there's a little cliche in martial arts called repetition is the mother of skill. So as you keep repeating it, you gain a level of skill. Bob, 2 days ago, I started, I've been listening to a lot of Ion, but I said, I want to listen to some Bob. So I went and did I think it's my third or fourth round of listening to, McLuhan on Maui number 33.
Oh yeah. The last one.
I always, in the past, like, would jump or listen to, but really the first, I want to say, 3 hours bounced off of me because Ion wasn't there. But then I really, this time, the first 3 hours of what you all covered blew me away. I mean, actually, I'm going to go back and make notes because you all
covered. Is that with Scott Taylor?
I think it was Scott. No, that was the Crystal. Andrew Crystal was there a little bit, but then there was a guy who talked. I forgot his name. There were two guys that I can't remember their names. But one guy was dealing with the the avatar.
Yeah, that guy was Ken Hudson. Ken Hudson.
Yes. Yes, and then there was another guy from New York. I forgot his name. In fact, you had a funny. I forgot his name. And you
Paul
forgot
Levinson.
His name. No,
Paul
the younger
Levinson's
guy
on there, and the other guy is the art critic Walter somebody, who was lying there sick, and he hardly could stay with us. There was him. So who, if it wasn't Walter or Paul, I'm not sure who the other guy would
Chad, be. Chad and Dave Neufeld were there, and I don't remember the names of the two other guys. I know one guy was a. He discussed the Ion about the avatar, but anyway, you all covered so much McLuhan.
Yeah.
In that first 3 hours, I mean, so many. But then what I found, I started to re-listen to it yesterday, make notes, and you started talking about McLuhan's reference of angels and robots.
Yes, yeah.
Body. And that was like, man, yes. And that was like, damn, McLuhan referenced angels and referenced angels as technology back then. And that made me think, well, Ion and everything and where we're standing now, and it's like, damn. I mean, it's really rich, really rich. I'm going back this week to make notes, but it was just amazing how you cover it. And just using McLuhan as an excavation tool, like you're doing now, you're excavating more insights of what a McLuhan is. You know, that's rich. That rich, really
okay.
rich.
Yeah, here's looking at the McLuhan on Maui site. The guests were Neufeld, Chad, and you're thinking of Miroslav Bites.
Yes.
Miroslav. And he might have had another name in there, a short name. Then Scott Norris, Ken Hudson, and myself. And then I say, then we have the encore of the new environment. Ion comes in. And I say, it's the first environment to actually speak of its effects.
Yes.
As it's happening. Scott Taylor was two before that. Two sessions before that.
Sine and cosine triangulation in there. That's what I mean. That's really something to go back and study, because he really lays out with Chad. I mean, even Finnegan's Wake. Chad starts to outline Finnegan's Wake in the Playfair Cipher.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's so much. I mean, that's just like really rich. Like that's what I'm studying now, as far as the MP3s.
Yeah, well, everything we did was rich. You know, you can get, it's like 628 pages. Every page is a session is rich.
Yes. Yes.
So, let's see. Anybody else want to say anything?
Did Keith come back, Bob?
I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe Jill could tell us. We're looking at Akil, Bob, I was hoping that you all come back to discuss Caswell, but I have to go now. Let's do the rest of February 10th next week. Oh, okay. So he wrote that 20 to 9, that would be 20. That's like 2 hours ago. I think, I'm not sure how you read that. What time do you see on the chat line?
It's 8:45 Pacific time, Bob.
That's Pacific time. Okay, so that's 5:45. Okay, so he just wrote that a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't, but we had to do what we did, Janet. But yeah, come back next. Akita should come in every week, and we'll just continue where we left off. Let's see. Now I got a whole bunch of new McLuhan letters. I've now organized 4,000 items of the 13,000 I have. So while doing that, I find all kinds of neat stuff. So we can go into that, but. Is Roxy still there? I don't see her. Well, her phone is sort of there, maybe. Is Roxy still available? Yeah, I think she is. Hey, Roxy. I don't see if I got it. I didn't get an email from her. I don't know if you. Now, you sent me, Gene, an email? What's this? Consider as a topic of discussion. Someone posted the above link on chat early this morning. It is the response from an unidentified, quote, very knowledgeable social democrat to a request for information from William Casey in June 1984 when he was CIA director. I suspect the Democrat Casey refers to as possibly Pat Moynihan, only because the response includes an article written by Moynihan. Here's the chat occurred between myself and number 54. 54 says, if you do a McLuhan search, well, maybe do you read this? I got to read the other direction.
It's
so letter from Pat Moynihan.
Yeah,
what?
It's released. It's released documents from the CIA.
Oh, okay, so letter from Pat Moynihan to Bill Casey, director of the CIA. So he says, now, it is clear that the decline of a language must ultimately have political and economic causes. See, what about media causes? But maybe that's what he means by political and economic. It is not due simply to the bad influence of this or that individual writer, but an effect can become a cause, reinforcing the original cause and producing the same effect in an intensified form and so on indefinitely. Right. That's T.S. Eliot awareness, not James Joyce awareness. Back in
the '20s.
So.
It was actually a quote, George Orwell quote.
Right. See, it goes way back there. That's not a. That's the beginning to noticing something, but you're doing it visually. Now, you then say Pat was quoting George Orwell. Then 54 says, if you do a McLuhan search within that CIA library, you'll find a whole lot of interesting stuff on the 60s and 70s CIA trying to figure out how to deal with the massive influx of media and the concern that it won't be able to fully parse it all by 1970. Yeah, that's right. They had as much identity crisis as anybody else did, and that's why in 1972, McLuhan's book on Take Today and on Watergate and on everything else that was going on in the espionage world, he was saying that espionage was obsolete. There was too much information going on, so the reasons to have espionage weren't valid anymore. Whatever they were trying to police... That policing of that George Orwell was talking about was not possible anymore. The people had been extended past those kind of social controls, which is what's wrong with Alex Jones and the Android meme replay of that paranoia, is that they're worried about things that the elites aren't even trying to stop anymore. And now it got to the point where in 2008 it totally collapsed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting that, yeah, we were talking last week that, I think it was last week, wasn't it, that the CIA were the only ones paying attention to McLuhan back then.
That's right. There's a book on that you can read, Imaginary Futures. Goes back to the KGB looking into McLuhan in the 50s, and then the CIA in the 60s, and it goes through all the elites and how they were trying to figure out. Like this note you just sent me, they're trying to figure out what is the role of information in an increasingly post-information society.
Yeah, and how to use it.
Yeah. And they do all kinds of things, like the P2 guys tried to have a coup in Italy in the 1970s. And there was something called the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions out in Santa Barbara someplace. And on the board was Harold Innes. So he's McLuhan's colleague. He was on there before he died, or it was someone like him. I can't remember right now. But on the board with him was a prince of Italian society. That prince, here he's part of a think tank, he tried to have a coup in Italy in 1970. He got so freaked out and confused. He thought he had to take over, and he got caught. He might have been a Borgia descendant. But you have, most of the fun of the last 40 years is watching the elites freak out and get confused and botch it. Every president ends up in a scandal. Every Big Brother institution ends up in a scandal, one after another. And that goes back to Dave Worster saying there was no basis for power or RAI anymore as of 1967. So you saw the people who had historically thought they had power stumbling around in the 70s and 80s, really making fools of themselves. And the newspapers agreeing not to emphasize the foolishness they were exposing because then the newspapers would collapse. So the media agreed to play down the scandals.
Yes, in this article. Well, all right, there's two things, Bob. The link that I sent shows, and this is release of CIA documentation, so it provides the memo from Casey, the director of Central Intelligence, to the deputy director, and he's forwarding these articles on, or this letter on. And the memo says, one, the attached is on the subject of the use of which the other side makes of words and concepts in damaging our reputation and diminishing our policies. Redacted, the name is whited out, is a very knowledgeable social democrat who has been following communist propaganda for over 40 years. If you think he would be helpful in formulating the project you and I talked about, I think he would be available. So Casey was believing that the communists were using the words
yeah.
and concepts.
Yes.
Now, but wasn't everybody using the words and concepts? It was the CIA also using them, weren't they? This wasn't something new to the CIA.
I know. It's the whole outrage of Russia interfering with the Trump election is so silly because the Americans have interfered with elections around the world since World War II.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Someone fucked with us?
Yeah.
See, there's a lot of perceptual biases in that the elite's response. They actually know that they're way ahead of everybody else, and they don't like the older Second World people coming up and replaying the 40s or something. It's getting in the way of whatever they think they're doing. But they can't tell what time it is, which is the last question in Twin Peaks, which reminds me, I got a fucking, I was supposed to phone Brian back. I wonder if he's still up.
Oh, shit, that's right.
Yeah, you can't count on me to remember because it's all so interesting as we get involved. How the fuck am I supposed to remember anything? You know,
so
if you're not directly involved, we will not notice you. Okay. Okay, what? Okay, so I will flash. Just a second.
Bert, can't you hear Ion saying dead air? No dead air.
Yes.
How you doing, Bert?
Pretty good, Nick. How are you?
Hey, strong as ever and getting stronger.
Great. Great.
Okay, you guys there?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure are.
I got the person with the phone, so they're just walking back to give it to Brian, so it worked out okay. Brian's wasn't available till 15 minutes from now anyway, so we weren't rude to him too much by forgetting. But so we might get into Twin Peaks, but I've got a whole bunch of McClone stuff here to do, but what do you want to talk about? Janet says, this is pure poetry. And then she says, Homeric, that is. Yes, and Roxy discovered that Ion in Plato there's a chapter called Ion, is a rhapsode. And the whole battle with Socrates is whether rhapsodic poetry, which is the oral poetry, the acoustic tactile society, whether that can qualify as literate poetry. That's what the debate is about back there with Socrates. Minimax posted, TV, you are the screen, hyperloud music, your rib cage is the speaker. Okay. Megadead, simulated apocalypse equals reality. Well, Bert, you said this and that is fantastic. You should say some content.
This and that. What do you reference to, Mao?
Well, you were saying, Bob, that whole thing of McClellan Mao, he's awesome, profound.
Yes.
But
I was talking about the angel,
particular.
The angel and robotic section.
Right.
Where he switched it over. At first he was talking about that the angel was left hemisphere.
Yes.
But then there was a reference that there was another reference in the text you read that the angel was right hemisphere. And that's where I left off last night as far as you went to clarify that.
Right. The McLuhan is always going to demonstrate to you in his books that when the ground changes, the definitions change for words. So he starts off understanding media, I think in the preface, saying the word cool in the 20s had the exact opposite meaning that cool had in the 50s and 60s. So the immediate changes, so words' meanings are reapplied. So he talked about being a robot. Literate mechanical man was a robot for 500 years, say 1500 to, mm-hmm. to 1900, 400 years. And he writes how Pavlov, the Russian scientist, discovered the robotic nature of our sensory conditioning, way back there, 100 years ago. And it had a different meaning for Russians than it did for Western individual literate people. Mm-hmm. So the West were shocked that the environment could affect them. So then they said, holy shit, we've been affected by the visual mechanical technologies for 500 years. We've been a robot. So in that first use of the word robot, it's a mechanical robot. But when you get to the book, The Global Village, written by the ex-CIA guy Bruce Powers of Niagara University with McLuhan in the mid-70s, they flip the terms. Electronic man becomes a robot. And the literate person becomes angel. And then you have to bring in McLuhan's concept of the super angel. And maybe I haven't read that in a long time. I don't know if Bruce Powers, since he had to finish the book after McLuhan died, there's a lot of his stuff in there. If you ever look at the book, see if he talks about the super angel. Because the super angel is the robotic angel. So whatever category we had about angels, and McLuhan basically said that was a visually biased thing in the Gutenberg era, but then the angels become, like you said, Bert, right-hemisphered and, let's say, acoustic, because they're really super angels. Humans become super angels because they can be wherever they want to be simultaneously.
Yes.
Whereas before, the angel can only be where it wants to go. It can go wherever it wants, but it's only there when it gets to someplace, then it can go.